Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Dark Delight Podcast with
Monday Morning Val.
Monday Morning Val and Beans, you had a fantastic weekend, I hope.
Yeah, it was great.
That's good. You got home what time last night?
Actually, it wasn't that late. I was back home by mid-afternoon, but you know, it was raining at that point. It was just a perfect October Sunday.
Good.
Just rainy and you get to do nothing.
We had that too here.
Good.
You know, a lot of rain. It was great. It was cozy. It was a cozy weekend. Saturday, I spent the day on the couch with a blanket and a sweatshirt playing Xbox games with my husband. And it was like, was beautiful.
Yeah. No, that's great. Saturday, we were in Lake George and that was during the day. And then at night, we just vegged out and just made a lot of food and just hung out.
Hey, I have some cool stuff to talk about.
Okay, go ahead.
The first thing I want to tell you is that we got a notification yesterday from our fabulous producers here at RadioInfluence.com that we are now available on iHeartRadio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I always wanted to learn how to use iHeartRadio. I think that it is beyond me now at this point, though. I have too many things that I listen to.
iHeartRadio is great. I use it all the time. I use it to listen to like radio that I can't get here because I feel like I'm in like the Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I want to listen to Rush, I use iHeart because they don't play it here. I don't know why.
I got you. Yeah. I got you. Okay. Yeah. So I know it's huge. I know that they have their own music festivals and all that stuff. But
yeah,
you know, between TalkStream Live and all of the podcast platforms and Pandora and Spotify, I don't know. So I know if you're on iHeart, it's already become a part of your life.
Yeah, it's good. So we're on there too. So now there's one more place that people can listen to the Dark to Light podcast. Tell your friends. Very exciting. Lots of stuff happened. And the first thing I want to talk about with you today, and I don't know how much you've gotten to look at this, and we've had many discussions about her in the past, Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah.
This whole fight with Hillary Clinton calling her a Russian bot or a Russian asset or whatever. And it just irks me, and it just doesn't sit right with me, and I haven't vocalized any of my feelings, so this will be the first time I'm doing it, and I have a lot to say. So she came out, Hillary Clinton, who's been reduced to doing obscure podcasts, on this podcast insinuated that Tulsi Gabbard and Jill Stein were both Russian assets being, propped up by Russian bots and stuff on social media. And it is the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard and most of everybody else has ever heard. Can you agree with that?
Yeah. Yes.
Wouldn't you then in turn agree that Hillary Clinton knows that everybody will think it's ridiculous?
I'd have to imagine, but but at the same time, she plays to a really, really low intelligence audience.
Yeah, but those people don't even think that she's legit.
I don't know. That's why as far as this little feud being subterfuge, I don't know. Because she would have to say, okay, well, the next step is I'm going to take on a great amount of insult from Tulsi. And then what is done with that momentum?
So there's a couple different things here. Number one, there is an ongoing feud between Clinton and Tulsi Gabbard from back in 2016 when she dropped the chairmanship of the DNC and decided to endorse Bernie Sanders because she didn't like the way he was being treated. So there's already that bad blood there because Clinton basically said, you know, you're excoriated now from the, you know, that's it. You're excommunicated, not excoriated. You're excommunicated from the party and no one will ever support you and we're going to make your life a living hell. So people are saying because that exists, this is organic. But I have never heard two more contrived and scripted responses than these two. Like, originally, Tulsi Gabbard's first tweet in response to Hillary Clinton was pretty harsh. And then when I read the thread that she wrote, I was like, this is so fake. I don't even believe that they're doing this.
Is it? Are you talking about the three tweet thread from the 18th?
Yes.
Okay. And I was wondering what predated that. Like, what was the podcast response? Okay, hold on a second. Now let me see here. I have a link here from the Washington Examiner from the 18th. Says Hillary Clinton says Tulsi Gabbard is a Russian asset groomed to ensure Trump re-election. This happened. Okay, yes. Campaign HQ podcast. All right. So this predates Tulsi saying, great, thank you, Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. She says, you, the queen of warmongers, embodiment of corruption, blah, blah, blah. And then there's been a concerted campaign to destroy my reputation. We wondered who was behind it. Now we know. And the last tweet is what really reeks for me. It is now clear that the primaries between you and me, don't cowardly hide behind your proxies. Join the race directly. Now, I'm like, okay, originally I'm like, it doesn't make any sense for her to prod Hillary Clinton or give Hillary Clinton an excuse to join the campaign. Because she doesn't, like, it doesn't really make sense. That doesn't. But that's what my initial gut thing was. There's something just not right here. Then my next thing was, this is perfect because for the Democrats. Because they don't care so much who their nominee is at this point, as much as they care that that Donald Trump doesn't win re-election. So what better way than to take a candidate who is already sympathetic or looked at sympathetically by middle-of-the-range voters, independents, moderates, even people on the right who champion her, which blows my mind. I don't understand it. And also, Bernie supporters or socialists that don't like the Democrat field wouldn't vote for any other candidate and therefore are kind of leaning more, you know, the people we converted in 2016, right?
Right.
What better way to grab those votes away from Trump than to make Tulsi Gabbard some black sheep targeted third party candidate?
Yeah, no, I see it, everything is a real amazing slap in the face until that last line.
Yeah,
I didn't understand that, too. Now it's clearly a primary between you and me. And, you know, also, it really makes you go back. It's almost like when I said when I went to go see Star Wars a couple of years ago, episode 7. And I was like, all right, you know what? There's a lot of hope here. We can work with a lot here. Then episode 8 came out and it was so bad. It made me go back to episode 7 and say, I can't forgive this anymore. And then it's the same thing with this Twitter thread where at first I'm thinking, okay, how did this start off? And now I know it was the whole podcast comment. But then we go to episode 8, which is now it's clear that this primary is between you and me.
It doesn't make – it's so contrived.
Yeah, because it sounds like WWF.
Right.
And I went back to the Hillary Clinton thing, and I'm saying to myself, okay, well, it's ridiculous on the face of it that you can call anybody who presents themselves as a third party. So what does that mean? Now anybody who tries to provide the American people with more than two choices is an agent of foreign influence. So I don't even think
that what she said matters. It's the op, you know, and what you're saying makes perfect sense. Like, you're destroying the argument. It doesn't make any sense.
No, exactly. But that's what I mean by her saying that. Now you get this retrospective almost after seeing this Tulsi tweet, the final line in it. You go back to Hillary's comments and you say, all right, was it really an absurd position about whether or not we can only ever have more than two choices before the third choice is really just a foreign agent? Or is this more of a way to make sure that whatever happens, these candidates battle it out within the two-party system, like keeping her there?
Well, Maybe. I don't tend to think it's like that. I don't think it's like a two-party duopoly argument. I think it's a they're prodding her, or she knows she's going to have to run third party now that they're trying. So here's the deal. This is my opinion, and everybody could take it for what it's worth. There were people yelling at me on my Twitter feed not to tell them what to think. I'm not telling anybody what to think. I'm saying what I think. And what I think is that anybody on the right who is a conservative, who is cheering on Tulsi Gabbard right now because she's taking on Hillary Clinton in this disingenuous way, has really got to take a step back and understand the way in which they're being used here. Because acceptance, even in the minute little way that it's being used right now, is enough fodder for anyone on the fence to be like, well, Trump supporters even like her, when her policy positions are disgusting. Nothing about this woman is moderate. Even her foreign policy, she's all over the place, Frank. She's all over the place. It's funny because Kyle, HNI John Miller, and myself saw this coming a week ago before any of this Hillary Clinton shit started happening. Excuse my French. And he did a thread calling her out on her hypocrisy and her back and forth and not understanding, like, prominent people who call themselves conservative have been championing Tulsi Gabbard since the beginning. I don't understand. Like, first of all, her policy positions on her website are socialist to the core. Do you know any of her policy positions outside of foreign?
Yeah, I was looking into them. I mean, you can start and stop with universal basic income. I mean, when you want to give everybody a welfare check just for being born, I don't even want to hear anything else you have to say.
Free college,
She's all in. She's all in.
She's a socialist who likes,
absolutely,
who says that she likes to end foreign wars, while at the other side of her mouth critiques Donald Trump for bringing home our troops from Syria. You know, she presents herself as level-headed, which is, oh, it's a level-headed Democrat. And everybody's like, this is great. No, she's not. She's a wolf in sheep's clothing that likes to wear white suits. Don't fall for the nonsense. We've even talked about how they've demonized her on this podcast where they put the zit on her chin. Remember we talked about that?
Yeah.
But I'm starting to realize it's not just that. This has been something that they've been trying to do the entire time. And now that the field is so ridiculous and there is no way they have a viable candidate, their only hope is to take someone like a Tulsi Gabbard that the right and the moderates are sympathetic to for some god, I have no idea why, and throw her in as a third party candidate. This is the same thing that Republicans accused Ron Paul folks of doing in the 2012 election, because we would not vote for Mitt Romney. And they said if we didn't vote for Mitt Romney, it was a vote for Barack Obama. And people were like, principle over party. And I was one of those people who wrote in Ron Paul for the presidential election in 2012 because I could not bring myself to vote for Mitt Romney. Right. But I think we're in different times right now, to be quite honest with you, where if Trump doesn't win, the country's finished. It wasn't like that. We had two establishment hacks in 2012. Now right. We have either we have a country or we don't. And it's that important.
Well, it's a choice between two different countries.
Yeah. Yeah. And these moderates who think Tulsi Gabbard's very pretty and she's great and she's a veteran. And, you know, somebody commented that she's actually not a combat veteran, even though she called herself a combat veteran. She was a medic who stayed in a certain area. And this guy who said this is a Green Beret who said, this is basically stolen valor that she's doing here. And, you know, Scott Pressler has come out in support of her. Jack Posobiec has come out in support of her. All these conservatives have come out in support of Tulsi Gabbard because the enemy of my enemy is my friend. But that's not what's happening here. And I'm very serious about this. It is so important that people understand what is happening, and no quarter can be given. None. No quarter can be given.
Yeah, there's a lot being tried there too. And, you know, going outside of all the ops and the, just whatever is being done and being played on for public consumption, I was looking at some of the comments underneath all this, people going after Tulsi Gabbard, people who are, you know, Democrat campaign analysts. I don't know. I was looking at their bios, just seeing where people are supposedly aligning themselves. I saw one guy said, he was talking to Tulsi Gabbard saying, "We signed up to fight for our country. Do you have any right to call anyone else a warmonger? You politicians make mistakes, yes, but they do not go out looking for wars. We don't see the big picture. This was a bad take." So going after, you know, just what Tulsi had thrown everybody. And I'm thinking to myself, outside of all of why this feud could be playing out in public, it is unbelievable to me that after all of this, people don't actually see, maybe we need to rebuild the party. You know that you had such a horrible, you have a bad, bad party with awful candidates whose messages do not resonate with anybody. And don't make us, if you do anything right now, it'll, that makes them look themselves in the mirror, they can't take it. It's like, don't rock the boat. We need to win. Win with what? You have no, this is an awful, awful group of people that you've aligned yourself with. Why isn't outside of all this nonsense, why doesn't anybody even take up the opportunity of figuring out what they have to do to actually become relevant again and shake off the cobwebs? Because I think that what American voters are missing out on here is that the only reason why politics are getting crazier is because their elected leaders are in deep legal shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The people who have a lot less to lose are Democrat voters. Their elected leaders are in deep legal shit. And that's the reason why we're living through all this chaos. Other than that, the Trump presidency hasn't hurt anybody. Creating jobs in a surplus over here in the U.S. isn't hurting anybody. Nobody is being – there's no rise of clans and lynch mobs. No, but this stuff that was promised, the World War III's, he's trying to end wars and prevent wars more than he's trying to start them. You know, so all of the promises of doom, they're not here. All right. The economic system is cracking. The facade there is falling apart. We understand that. But that was happening before he showed up. So I don't understand why people can't look at this and say, you know what? I'm not hurting. But it seems like we're still in chaos. Why is that? It's because the political elite are trying to protect themselves, and we're being used as human shields. It's actually in the best interest of everybody for these parties to implode and be forced to rebuild themselves in some kind of a responsible way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not happening. It just makes me, I'm going to be strong about this. I'm going to be strong about it. It's a serious thing, and people are angry with me again. I don't care. I don't care in this instance because it's that important. If you can't see through it, just take a minute, take a step back, and you are being used as a pawn in a ridiculous chess game. And even if I'm wrong, Frank, let's pretend I'm wrong about all of this. There is literally no reason for anybody on the right to be supporting this woman. She is a socialist nightmare.
For the most part, people are going to applaud anybody who takes a pot shot at Hillary Clinton. I don't think that this is – personally, I don't have any data behind it, but I can't see how this is going to – anybody who voted Trump in 2016 going to switch over to Tulsi.
But that's not the people we're worried about. That is not the people. That's what everybody keeps saying. We're not going to – you think I'm going to vote for her? No. But in a group mentality, when you're a moderate or someone who's an independent who doesn't have the same information base as the right does, the hardcore Trump supporter, and you're standing there and you don't like President Trump and you don't like Elizabeth Warren, and you're like, who am I going to vote for? And you say, well, I lean more right on this, this, and this, and I don't like these wars, and the right seems to like Tulsi Gabbard, so maybe I'll vote for her. There's the Trump vote gone. And the enablement of it, because this enemy of the enemy is my friend thing that's being force fed down our throats is making it easier for an independent voter to feel comfortable. Not that I'm, I'm just saying, if she were an independent or a moderate, legitimately, Frank, who was running as a Democrat and then she ran third party and those people wanted to vote for her, fine. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
But she's not. So to have the right and even some progressives that have now moved to the right supporting her when she is an abject socialist in all of her policies is dangerous to me as a political operation. And I hope that I'm being clear about that. Like, she's not being genuine. Well, the perception of her is not genuine. It's based on incorrect facts. Add to that that a lot of her political issues on her webpage link back to tweets. And there's really no substance there. Like, she lists some bills that she supports and blah, blah, blah. But, like, her policy positions on her website are her tweets on Twitter. I don't want to make it seem like I'm trying to manipulate people into who they vote for. But I am trying to make sure that everybody understands that, like, I had some people saying, well, she's a moderate, you know, she's actually a Democrat. And I'm like, no, she's not. These are people on the right saying this. And I'm like, she's not. And if these people think it, then I don't even want to know what the people in the middle think who aren't definite Trump voters. Anyway, there's that.
Well, no matter what, I don't think anybody has his ground game anyhow. And when all this started happening, you can see how he immediately started using it for one reason or another. I don't know. It's one of those things I acknowledge. I say, okay, well, that's funny. That's interesting. Well, this smells fishy. But other than that,
I disagree with you on the importance of it. Like, just being like, and moving on by it. I can't. It's too important. It really, in my opinion, anyway. So anyway, moving on from that, we also had another socialist who planted his feet firmly in New York at, in Queens, Long Island City. Bernie Sanders had supposedly about 25,000 people at a rally he held where AOC came out to endorse him. And what AOC said to him or said in her speech, it's, you know, talk about feminism, right? Assigning this much value, which I'm going to show you in a second. I think this is it, the clip. Here.
Until I heard of a man by the name of Bernie Sanders. To question and assert and recognize my inherent value as a human being that deserves health care, housing, education, God. And a living wage.
Yeah, you got your living wage, all right. You got your living wage. First of all, you can throw a rock in New York City and hit 25,000 socialists.
Yeah, well, that's so. People were. Now, this is something that I just shrug off, Frank. Because people were like, uh-oh, you know, Trump's in trouble. And I'm like, seriously? Like, this is New York. This is Queens.
Yeah. Uh-oh, Trump's in trouble. He might lose New York worse than he did before.
I mean, go to Suffolk County and pull a rally like that. You're not going to get anything.
Jeez.
You know? Like, there are millions of socialists in New York City. That's why you have the policies you have there. Go to Staten Island, try to do a Bernie rally. See how many people show up.
You see, the best thing about this is that it really is a glimpse into a reality we could be living in where 25,000 to 8 million socialists get together in one location and they're all, you know, they do their prayers and their chants and they worship their living gods and all that stuff. And they talk about themselves in the third person. And you look at all that and they act defiantly in the face of a president they don't like or an idea that they don't like, which really should not have any real impact on their lives. New York and its cities, its counties, should be able to be as crazy to the left as they want. Its only thing is that the only people that are going to make all of their dreams a political reality are the people who are standing there at that rally, who are willing to chip in to pay for everything that the person next to them believes they are entitled to have. That is the only thing. So it's great that they get together for Sunday mass together and they do their socialist chants and prayers. It's just that, you know, this whole mark of defiance against a president who's trying to be your daddy is so ridiculous in itself.
There was a great interview this weekend with Kim Strassel and Jan from Epoch Times on American Thought Leaders, where she says you can't be a libertarian dictator. So, like, she basically questions, she points out the media's demonization of Trump, calling him, like, it's basically calling out their contradictory slurs. He's either authoritarian or he's the biggest idiot. That, you know what I mean? Like, it was a really good episode. Let me make a note to put that in the notes for today, because it was really good. And all of the things she says make a lot of sense. I never heard Strassel for more than an hour, but she makes that point, Frank, the hypocrisy of everything. Over the weekend, we had something else too, Frank.
What was that?
Beto O'Rourke and Julian Castro, or whatever his name is. Yeah, Castro. In detention, Beto O'Rourke says this, in detention centers and in prisons, in big cities and small towns, women across America don't have access to the period products they need.
Oh no, the period products are gone.
On National Period Day, men need to join women in demanding real change, which is why I'm supporting the Menstrual Equality Act.
Oh, God. Thank God for this man. Who else would be out there supporting the Menstrual Equality Act?
I really don't know where we'd be in this country if it weren't for people like Beto.
Who's menstrual? Who did he go in to say who is having an unequal period?
Let's actually take a look at that right now. I'm curious. What is the Menstrual Equality Act?
I want to know whose period is being treated unequally, because that sounds awful to me. I want everybody's periods to be the same.
It is.
Men, women,
providing
everybody's period.
Free menstrual hygiene products to students who use them. Sanitary napkins and tampons. I guess if people don't have the money to buy these, amounts paid for menstrual hygiene products shall be treated as a qualified medical expense, eligible for reimbursement from a flex spending arrangement. The term menstrual hygiene products means sanitary napkins, tampers, tampons, liners, cups, and similar items. You know, the funny thing is that there have been lately a spat or a bunch of trans, I don't know if this is right, men who have transitioned to being women or are in the process of doing so, who say that they have their period.
Right.
And I was talking to my family last night at the dinner table about this, which in and of itself is a problem.
Right.
Because
this before or after the food was served?
After the food was eaten, we were just finishing up, and my husband and my son were having a little squabble, and I figured I'd break the ice and say, hey, guys, first of all, there's an article on the web that says that Always is removing the female sign from the box or their packaging to be more inclusive of
people who don't have periods.
Well, that's what I thought originally, and that's how I framed the argument for my daughter. But in actuality, it's women transitioning to men who still get their period and are offended that the female symbol is on the packaging.
you're a man now, right?
No.
I just don't get it.
So
if you're a man, it's oh God.
I want you to hear.
Oh, my brain.
I know. I need you to hear what my 13-year-old says.
All right.
Helga.
As a female symbol.
Ready?
Go.
Okay. You guys are ridiculous. Now, I'm not talking about the people that aren't complaining about this, but these people that are ridiculous, okay? Always has a female symbol on their products because it's made for females. Men that change your gender do not have periods.
Are you sure, Vivian?
Yes, I'm sure. If you got a ding-a-ling, you don't have a period. Period.
Well, hey, well, but then there's the other side of this now that we have to consider. That women who want to transition to be men, they still have their periods.
And always have their
because they're women.
Yes. And that is one thing that you cannot change unless you get a hysterectomy. And that is inherently female. So I love to see the mental gymnastics that these people are doing. I mean, I don't even understand what planet we're on anymore. These big corporations are, and it's funny because Mindy Robinson tweets to Beto, male feminist telling me how I should feel about my period on Twitter is peak 2019. Because how hypocrite, the whole thing is just, oh God, I can't. Prank.
Yeah, no, I can't either. So don't look to me. This is awful.
It's
truly awful.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's horribly awful. Let's go through some headlines real quick.
Oh, man. I wish the weekend was three more days. I wish there was three more days to last weekend.
Why?
No, because I was not thinking about shit like this. You know, it wasn't even there. I barely had Wi-Fi coverage. It was great. It was really, really great. And but you know, I knew we were heading back because whenever we would go to the grocery store or something, they'd have a small newspaper rack with the New York Daily News or the New York Post that makes its way up there. And I'm saying to myself, oh, because the New York Daily News is the craziest. It's the craziest newspaper you'll ever see in your life. There may be things out there as crazy, but nothing crazier. And I'm thinking Matt and I were looking at one. We're like, well, this is what's waiting for us on the way home. That's it. You know, if people are crazy up in the mountains, maybe there's crazy people in the mountains, but there's so few of them. You can't see them.
You see the stars, though. Did you see any good meteors or anything?
Stars are great. I didn't see any meteors, though. None. Because it peaks tonight.
Oh.
You know, so in the 19th, the night of the 19th is the night we really got some clear skies, though.
Okay. Well, Lake George is beautiful. It's really nice up there.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a headline out of California. California mandates all American flags have stars of anti-LGBTQ states removed.
When was this?
I see this on October 18th, 2019. And the point of this headline I just read is that I went over to the Babylon Bee and I read their headlines and I'm like, I believe all of this.
Oh, is this Babylon
Bee? It's Babylon Bee. But okay. My point is that you'd believe that, right?
I do believe it. And I'll tell you why. There's five things. First of all, just within the last week and a half alone, we have a lot of legislative action coming out of California. We had them mandating that abortion pills are available on college campuses.
Mm-hmm.
California became the first state to ban new fur products. They banned smoking and vaping at state parks and beaches. Gavin Newsom signed legislation banning school lunch shaming. And also there was a new bill restricting
school lunch shaming.
Lunch shaming.
Is that like when I was a kid and I'd bring in peanut butter and jelly and it would get smushed in my lunch bag? People would make fun of me for it. Is that lunch shaming?
Let me see here. Hold on. Let me get this up. School lunch. California bans. California bans lunch shaming of K through 12 children whose parents are behind on cafeteria bills.
Oh, weren't they going to? Wasn't there another story about that, like out of another state a year or so ago, where they were like literally going to kick the kid out of school and arrest the parents for being behind on their lunch payment?
Yes. Oh, and this I kind of I understand. But as far as lunch shaming, I don't know. I would never take that out on the kid.
No, who
but
would?
But there's also if that is the way you're set up, okay, you know what kind of a school you're getting yourself into and you're putting your child into. If that is the setup for lunch, then it's ridiculous to say, okay, I understand lunch is not free and they provide it for as a service and you can buy into it if you want. Okay, if you understand that going into the school, then you don't just start sending your kid to school with nothing to eat, forcing the school to give them lunch, which is the humanitarian thing to do, and then just say, what? It's a human right. Stop shaming me. So it's one thing. I understand, A, give the child lunch. They've got to eat. B, I don't know where the shaming comes in. Just take it up with the parents privately. Because it is their fault for running up a tab on something that they obviously are not prepared to be involved in. I don't understand. But they have that going on. And they also passed new bills restricting gun rifle purchases, like multiple purchases within a certain amount of time. I don't know. So California's really busy.
Well,
But that's it. So you see, that's what I'm talking about. 25,000 socialists in New York.
Yeah. Well, you know, listen, their policies eventually, and this is the thing you're going to say about California. Number one, they are sticking to their word in terms of the policy they're implementing. So, in other words, what they're saying they're going to do, they're doing. But what the problem is now is that given that they're doing it, the people that are now being affected by these policies are very angry. For example, there was just a resolution passed in California. Now, we had covered earlier the problem for Uber in California, where the government in California does not want to allow Uber drivers to be considered independent contractors. They want Uber to have to hire these people full time, pay their benefits, pay their insurance, et cetera, so on and so forth, and take away the freedom and flexibility that this sort of work gives to the people that do it. So the Uber was in a big fight. It was big corporation versus government and the people. And, you know, like people were spread all out. But the thing that stemmed from it is another thing. If you're a freelance writer and you do that for a living, you know, it depends on what you write and how you write it. Like you're either paid per word, you're paid per piece, you're paid not a lot of money typically to write. Okay. So you write with hundreds or, you know, dozens of different outlets and you write often to be able to support yourself and your family. And you do it as an independent contractor. So you are a sole proprietor. You pay taxes at the end of the year, whatever, however you do it, you pay for your own health insurance. You're self-employed. What California has now decided is that arbitrarily, they're admitting they arbitrarily, after some argument back and forth with some freelancers in California, picked a number of 35 articles. Now, if you write more than 35 articles for any one publication per year, that's two a month, correct?
Yeah.
Basically, you are now, they are forced to hire you as a full-time employee. So all these independent contractors writing as freelancers are like, we are going to starve.
Yep.
We cannot even support ourselves this way anymore. And no publication is going to hire a full-time writer. It's just not going to happen. So now all of the people that are freelancers in California are going to be out of income. What does that cause? More dependence on the government. It is a self-defeating prophecy.
They're so caring. They're so caring in government. They always have the best interests of people in mind. That's why they screw everything up that they touch.
I mean, it's so great to watch these folks go after one another. Because they're arguing with their own. like in the threads I've read, the left is arguing against itself on their stupidity and their policies. And it's beautiful, to be honest.
Well, it's beautiful to watch the fireworks.
Yeah, it really is.
I just hope that there's, you know, several bells are rung and people understand that it's getting worse. Why all this stuff? Why? You know, if there are opportunities for people to actually go out there and be free, and there's not a civil rights issue, now everybody has to understand this is just textbook micromanagement. It has nothing to do with being in a liberal society. If we were in a liberal society, why couldn't you go and work however the way you want, construct your day however the way you want?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody's forcing you to be a freelance writer. Maybe that just fits in to the life you're living right now.
No one's forcing you to be an Uber driver. As a matter of fact, all the Uber drivers I've ever spoken to absolutely love the flexibility of Uber. Like, yeah, there are some people who drive full time for Uber and Lyft, and they make a good living.
Yeah, a lot, and quite a few of the Uber drivers I was able to talk with and all that stuff out in California too, mostly. The only time I've ever had Uber, I used Uber, was in California and Washington, D.C. But there are a lot of people that take it so seriously that they invest in a second car just for just for that kind of work.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is that the government allots you a certain amount of money back per mile or for your expenses when you drive your car for work. So it's a huge tax deduction. It's a huge deduction. It's like 60 cents a mile or 57 cents a mile now. So if you're driving your primary vehicle for Uber and you're putting 30, 40, 50,000 miles on your car for Uber every year, think about that. Hold on, Frank, 1 second. I'm back. We stopped for a second. One of the things that I forgot to mention to Frank about the Tulsi thing is that there is a thread underneath. There's a Neera Tanden tweet where she talks about why major media outlets aren't more concerned about Russian bot support of Tulsi. And the left argues with one another underneath about Hillary Clinton's viability and mental state. The whole Russia is a scapegoat thing. And then why the actions of the left are going to force a 2020 reelection of Donald Trump. Super interesting. These are regular, like, so for example, this one woman, she says, I see what you're saying. The self-identified progressives or social Democrats like Sanders and Warren are the worst thing that ever happened to Democrats at a time like this. And if nominated, will likely give Trump 4 more years. So there is an unintended positive that I meant to address as well, in that a lot of the left are sitting around now looking at each other, the ones who may have been on the fence, saying if they made this up against Tulsi Gabbard, who we love and know is not a Russian asset, then could they have made this up against Trump? And And B, understanding that the state of the Democrat Party right now does not identify, or the people, most centrist people do not identify with the state of the Democratic Party right now and wouldn't be able to advocate for socialism. There are still moderate Democrats in existence in this country that absolutely despise President Trump, but do not align themselves with the Warren or Sanders. Very interesting verticals here.
I like it, though.
Me too.
I like it. It's and also just from the standpoint of this, man, oh man, October 21st, 1 year from today. I don't even want to know what we're going to be talking about.
God only knows. I think about that every day.
I remember, Tracy, a day after the election, 2016, telling myself there in November, I can't even imagine what we're going to be talking about in April of 2017. And of course, we were getting ready for the launch of special counsel at that point. things were really starting to move along with the Russia nonsense. I mean, it would only be two months later we learned about the dossier in any significant form. I can't even imagine what we're talking about in 5 months from now.
Yeah. Yeah. How crazy, how much more crazy could it be? Really? You want to hear how much crazy it could be? How much more crazy it could be? I've got something for you.
Okay.
The pace of
here we go.
You know, President Trump, perhaps inspired by Goebbels and the propagandists of the Third Reich, seemed to employ this tactic that the bigger the lie, the more obscene the injustice, the more dizzying the pace of this bizarre behavior, the less likely we are to be able to do something about it.
Did I hear you correctly say that perhaps he was influenced by Goebbels and the Third Reich in terms of telling a big lie? I just want to make sure that's what I heard you say.
That's right. There is so much that is resonant of the Third Reich in this administration, whether it is attempting to ban all people of one religion and saying that Muslims are somehow inherently dangerous or defective or disqualified. Outside of Nazi Germany, it's hard for me to find another modern democracy that had the audacity to say something like this. And then this idea from Goebbels and Hitler that the bigger the lie and the more often you repeat it, the more likely people are to believe it. That is Donald Trump to a T. The things that he says about immigrants committing crimes, being rapists, being predators and animals, seeking to dehumanize them. That's how we get them in cages. That's how we lost the lives of 7 children in our custody and care.
I have to stop it because I can't even listen to this asshole anymore.
No, that's all he is, too. He's just a big talking asshole.
Like, I'm like literally speechless because are there really people out there? Does he really believe this shit that he's saying? Does he really believe it? Or is he just a huge walking propagandist?
I don't know. I think it might be both because he is a stupid clucking chicken. He is an idiot. I really do think it's both. I think he believes it. And I think he is at the same time, a giant moron. I actually had that set aside for tonight too
because
it's so fucking. Oh, it's so amazing with the Goebbels comment.
There's more. I have another one here.
It's the first time he said Goebbels too.
Yeah,
his friend. I know what happened. They his campaign help brought him up. He said, okay, well, we're going to reference this man now. His name is Joseph Goebbels, and blah, 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 blah. And it's what you're going to say. It's what do you say? Here's some Goebbels quotes. And Beto said, are you sure it's Goebbels? I mean, it's spelled Goebbels. Goebbels. Gobbles. Are you sure? Are you sure it's not Goebbels?
Goebbels. Gobble? Gobble, like Turkey Day, you
like
know?
Like Turkey? Like how? No, you idiot.
Are you almost sick and tired of Lindsey Graham yet, or where are we on that scale?
I don't care about the man. I don't trust him as far as I can throw him. And I saw this turnaround all of a sudden with Syria, or at least this shocking little, you know, I see the future and I think it's a success all of a sudden. I don't know. I don't trust the man. I think that I don't even think that we're at a point here where we have to applaud people for doing things that are good in a rudimentary sense, you know? So it is what it is. As long as he votes correctly, whenever something crosses his desk, that's what it lives and dies as. I don't
even really care. Like, a lot of people are like, have hearings in the judicial, you know, they're pointless. Really? Like, it doesn't make any sense to have hearings when there are already ridiculously massive ongoing investigations from Durham. And they've just expanded. And a lot of the CIA is lawyering up now. Have you seen that?
Yes.
So, you know, there's stuff going on and, you know, people coming in front of his committee are not going to be able to talk about anything. But I'm really sick and tired of him being, you know, brought on all these news programs to talk about this stuff. He's disingenuous. He's a war hawk. He's always been a war hawk. And he is anti-Trump whenever he needs to be. So I don't know. I have a clip of him talking about this stuff. He's always like, I want to know here.
I want to write a letter to Barr. I want your listeners to understand that I think Ukraine was involved in the 2016 election. I think they were trying to hurt Trump. They may have been working with the Democrats. And I,
what did it do that for?
Ukraine involvement in our 2016 election, like Mueller looked at the Russian involvement. That has yet to be done, and it needs to be done.
You want a special counsel?
I've been calling one for a year, but if Durham is doing it, I'm okay. But I'm going to write a letter to Barr. I want him to tell me that, yes, we're looking at the allegations regarding Ukrainian interference in our 2016 election. Manafort, who was the president's campaign manager for a relatively short period of time, worked in the Ukraine, and I think people are out to get him. But the political article is very disturbing, where DNC members went to the Ukrainian embassy to find dirt.
Right.
So the bottom line, I hope we look at Ukrainian corruption, and I'd like to call the prosecutor into the United States and have him testify.
Just to be clear, this is the prosecutor that now, Joe Biden got fired.
Now, Glenn Beck, who I'm not a fan of, Frank, has been doing a lot of work on Ukraine. Yesterday, he released an interview with Tereshenko, who is one of the people who was working with Tereshenko, sorry, who was one of the people that was working with the prosecutor who was fired. He had stepped back from that position because he didn't agree with that prosecutor on a lot of things, and had a principal stepped back from that position and then became a diplomat at the embassy. And he did an hour and 20 minute long interview with Glenn Beck, who, I'm sorry, but looks like Colonel Sanders.
Yeah.
And that's all that people were talking about in the thread that I did. And then somebody shared a video of their Twitter feed, and there was a Kentucky Fried Chicken ad underneath my tweets.
What do you know?
And he's like, sometimes Twitter is perfect. But there are two clips I want to listen to before we hear.
On the ground here and give.
What was the talk? What was the talk about when the president started talking about the servers, the DNC servers, and the Crossroads? I think it was CrowdStrike. What was that all about? Do you know?
I think that's what they wanted to find out. Are these servers in Ukraine, which the DNC put them here? The problem, the issue is here, because here people have to understand Ukraine is maybe some foreign country to most Americans, but for the Democratic Party and for Soros, it's a big hub which they use for more than 20 years to invest in millions and millions of dollars into this country, into their operatives who work on the ground here, and giving them grant money. We're basically loyal to them, and basically so they can only trust Ukraine.
It's kind of like a black. It's
so
kind of like
what he said was that the Democrats hid the server in Ukraine.
Man,
and that it is basically Soros Democrat playground of malfeasance there.
It's like where they hide all their bones.
Yeah, in Ukraine, and. He also, in this interview, goes on to say a couple really interesting things. New President Zelensky, new prosecutor there doing these investigations. But remember how Giuliani was supposed to go there, changed his mind, didn't go. We talked about that. And he said that Zelensky and Trump said Zelensky is still surrounded by some of the same malfeasance and jerks that he was, that the last people were. Mm-hmm. Well, there were some oligarchs that are on the other side, we'll say, who got that prosecutor in and Tereshenko is basically saying it's the same stuff over again because this prosecutor is also corrupt. So whatever new investigation they're doing, this guy needs to be removed. He's from the same crowd and there is no advancement really in Ukraine right now in terms of getting rid of this stuff. And Zelensky's being played like a cheap fiddle.
Jeez.
And there's another clip where he talks about why it is that everybody's going to Giuliani with this stuff. And it's really hard to understand. But what he says is Giuliani stepped forward and said, I'm doing this, you know, before it was public, I'm doing this on behalf of my client. I need to figure out what happened here. He's being investigated for things that obviously were done by someone else. And we need to figure out what happened. And when these folks tried to get this information to the DOJ did absolutely nothing with it. So Rudy Giuliani, it was like when somebody, you know, is stranded on an island and you are begging for help and someone finally stops to help you and you're like, oh my gosh. So you just dump it all on that person. That's what Giuliani became to all these whistleblowers who've been trying to tell what happened during 2016.
So what do you think? What do you think? What are the prospects here? Is it really even, I don't, you know, everybody, there's always that time of point of reflection where we always come to the conclusion or come to the reassurance that, hey, what has to be undone is not going to take just a couple of years, considering how many years this network of nonsense of international criminality has been built up. But my, oh my.
It's almost like the entire world structure was just was corrupt forever, right? And then just took it way too far. Like, you know, just started rampantly everywhere, every country, not just here. And then the people started getting wise to it because it was just right in their faces. And that is why you're seeing the civil unrest you're seeing all over the world. You know, there's civil unrest here, but we haven't taken to the streets yet because we have a leader in office that we voted for that seems to be doing the, you know what I mean?
Right.
But all over the rest of the world, France, Hong Kong, Spain, Turkey, everywhere, you're seeing people taking to the France, taking to the streets, demanding change. Because it just, I mean, think about the level of malfeasance we're dealing with here all over the world.
We're still pretty calm right now because most people, even the poor, still expect to get three meals a day.
Well, the poor are doing better in this country than they have ever done before.
Yep.
There are so many jobs right now, we don't have enough poor people to fill them all. And that's the straight up statistic. There shouldn't be one unemployed person with skills, even without skills, for goodness sakes.
Intriguing times.
That's
and,
for sure.
Yeah. No, it'll keep uncovering more and more. Damn.
It just gets, it's like, which one do we focus on, for God's sakes? Which one? Which one do we focus on, Frank?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that has always been the question, too. As you progress and as you move yourself along in these storylines in a linear fashion, how many things do we uncover along the way that just get washed away and a new scandal and all of the crimes that pop up in the uncovering of details or the covering up of detail? Like, the cover-ups are crimes too in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much along the way. Where do you even stop? I brought it up a couple of weeks ago on this show. Are we ever going to get anything out of even an ethics violation for Dianne Feinstein and the Christine Blasey Ford debacle? There were clearly, if you're going to send George Papadopoulos to jail for 2 weeks for inaccurate statements made to an FBI agent, how many inaccuracies and contradictions and things that we saw, all the information that came out just around the Brett Kavanaugh thing. And that was just one stop along the way. That didn't have anything to do with Russia.
Yeah.
That was just a new side mission. If we're playing an RPG game right now, Brett Kavanaugh was just a huge side mission for these people.
It's.
So, I mean, you talk about, are we ever going to get around to all of them? I'd say no.
I don't think it's possible.
And not within this system, not within a system that is largely controlled by these people, because even those who are not involved in certain scenarios are still held account by their implication in other scenarios.
We've got all this stuff going on that we've talked about today of importance, and the media is caught up on Mitt Romney running a secret Twitter account under the alias Pierre Delecto and praising himself with it. This is what we're talking about in this country. It's Wednesday, Frank. We'll be back Wednesday.
Yes, we will.
With another episode of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Monday morning, but haven't had anything to drink yet, Val.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
I know. Well, I'm going to go grab some coffee.
And beans. You guys can listen to us on Are You Ready?
Yes.
Tune in. Stitcher. Google Podcasts. Apple iTunes. iHeartRadio. And RadioInfluence.com. We will see you Wednesday.
Later.
Initiate procedure.
Now, stand by for the MJ Morning Show.
The MJ Morning Show is back. Hi, it's MJ. Join me along with Froggy and Fester. We're going to bring you up to speed on what's been happening since our last show. We'll even reveal never-before-heard stories from the past, including some infamous controversies. This is the great MJ Morning Show that you remember. With regular new episodes, we'll even have some of the crazy cast of characters on, like Dave the Dwarf and more. The all-new MJ Morning Show podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, on the iHeartRadio app, and RadioInfluence.com.